You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Tuesday, December 7, 2021. Try Just a Little Bit Harder, Part 2. Very Low and No Carbon Alternatives to Old School Bunker Fuels. Published by Housley Carr. International shipowners need to significantly reduce their carbon dioxide emissions by 2030 and will come under pressure to achieve carbon neutrality by 2050. Given that the industry currently depends almost entirely on fossil fuels for ship propulsion, and that every zero or near zero carbon alternative faces serious headwinds, it won't be an easy or low-cost transition. One pathway would be expanding the use of LNG as a bunker fuel in the near term and then shifting to alternatives like bio-LNG and synthetic LNG as they become more commercially available and economic. Another would be to use green or blue hydrogen, ammonia, or methanol. But there are challenges to each, not the least of which are the small volumes of non-traditional fuels being produced, and their high cost, and the need for new infrastructure both to produce and distribute them, as we discuss in today's RBN blog. This is the second blog in our series on efforts to reduce emissions of carbon dioxide, or CO2, and other greenhouse gases in the shipping industry, which accounts for about 3% of global GHGs. In Part 1, we looked at the push by leading international shipping associations and many large shipowners to have the International Maritime Organization, or IMO, ratchet up the industry's decarbonization goals. In effect, shipowners, themselves under pressure from their large, ESG-minded customers, shareholders, and lenders, are telling the IMO its goals of reducing global shipping's carbon intensity, or CI, by 40% from its 2008 level by 2030 and total GHG emissions by 50% by 2050 are far too timid. They want the IMO to set a more aggressive CI reduction target for 2030 as well as a goal of eliminating or fully offsetting GHG emissions by mid-century. Further, a long list of international shipping associations, including the International Chamber of Shipping Intercargo and the World Shipping Council, has been pressing for the creation of a $5 billion research and development fund to accelerate the advancement and introduction of zero-emission technologies and fuels for maritime transport. If approved, the IMO-administered fund would be financed by a proposed $2 per metric ton, or $2 per MT, levy on all marine fuel sales. There also have been a number of proposals, by countries, shipping organizations, and individual companies, to implement a levy on shipping companies for each metric ton of CO2 equivalent, or CO2e, their fleets emit. While the IMO and its Marine Environment Protection Committee, or MEPC, which has been overseeing the development of new emissions regulations, consider next steps, shipowners are evaluating potential strategies for transitioning to very low carbon or no carbon bunkers. A major consideration for them is the fact that new container ships, bulk carriers and tankers are major, long-term investments, expected life of 20 to 25 years, and that they only want to commit to building new vessels if they know that their propulsion systems and fuel tanks make sense over the long run. As we said a while back in Travel and Clean, the imposition of a sulfur limit of 0.5% for marine fuels from 2020 resulted in shipowners ordering more than 200 new-build LNG-powered vessels and planning port infrastructure to support LNG bunkering at major ports. Their reasoning is that, in addition to complying with IMO 2020, vessels fueled by LNG generate up to 23% less CO2 than those powered by very low sulfur fuel oil. Also, LNG-based ship propulsion is a mature technology that has been used successfully for many years, not just on LNG carriers but on a variety of other vessel types. These pros are countered to some degree by cons, including somewhat higher engine and tank costs, the extra space needed on board for LNG tanks. An LNG storage tank is nearly 2 times the volume of a distillate tank holding an equivalent amount of fuel energy, and the lack of LNG bunkering infrastructure at many ports relative to traditional fuels, though, as we said, that is now in the process of being addressed in more than 90 locations worldwide now offer LNG as a bunker fuel. The obvious question, you probably just asked it yourself, is, well, reducing CO2 emissions by 1/5 or so isn't enough, is it? As LNG as bunker advocates see it, the answer is that, no, it's not, but it's a start, and over time the same engines, tankage, and bunkering infrastructure used for LNG today could be used for zero or near zero carbon alternatives like bio-LNG or synthetic LNG, both of which are chemically identical drop-in fuels that can also be blended with conventional LNG. Bio-LNG, aka liquefied biomethane, is produced by 1. processing organic waste flows such as agricultural and forest waste, manure, and sewage sludge, 2. Separating the methane and CO2 produced during that processing, and 3. Liquefying the methane, much like natural gas is compressed and supercooled into LNG. Synthetic LNG in turn is made from combining green or blue hydrogen and captured CO2 to produce methane, or CH4, which is then liquefied. As we've discussed in a number of blogs, including Help Part 2, green hydrogen is produced by using electrolysis powered by renewable energy to separate the hydrogen, or H2, and oxygen, or O, in water, or H2O. Bio-LNG and synthetic LNG already are in at least limited use in the shipping industry. For example, CMA CGM Group, the French shipping giant and proponent of LNG as a marine fuel, recently helped initiate a program under which several municipalities in Provence are converting household waste into bio-LNG for blending with conventional LNG to fuel LNG-powered cargo ships sailing from the port of Marseille. Also, CMA CGM and Shell in late November performed the first ship-to-ship bunkering of a 90/10 blend of LNG and bio-LNG to a smaller container ship at Rotterdam. CMA CGM, which has announced plans to be a net-zero carbon shipper by 2050, has 20 vessels capable of being powered by LNG, bio-LNG, synthetic LNG or an LNG blend, and will have 44 such ships in operation by the end of 2024. One concern about LNG in any form, whether it be conventional LNG, bio-LNG, or synthetic LNG, is the potential for even small amounts of methane, or CH4, to be released into the atmosphere during its production, transportation, and injection into an engine. This is because methane has a GHG impact 75 times that of CO2. LNG advocates insist that this issue has largely been addressed and major initiatives are being discussed to continue to clean up the methane value chain. In particular, engine manufacturers continue to make progress toward further reductions in methane slip, but others say it remains a major worry. While CMA CGM and a number of other shipowners believe that shifting to conventional LNG now and building up their ability to supplement that fuel with bio-LNG and synthetic LNG over time is the best way forward, others see hydrogen, ammonia, and methanol as better long-term options for meeting the increasingly stringent CO2 reduction goals the IMO is likely to set. Each of these non-LNG bunker fuel alternatives faces its own set of challenges, so we'll take them one by one this time, providing only brief overviews and then discussing them in more depth in future blogs. We should note up front, however, that a commonality among hydrogen, ammonia, and methanol is that they only qualify as very low or no carbon bunker options if they are produced in a way that either generates little or no CO2 or, failing that, if the CO2 generated during their production is captured and sequestered, commonly referred to as blue hydrogen, ammonia, or methanol. Currently, production of green or blue versions of these fuels is very limited and expensive, but their availability is expected to increase and their unit cost to come down over time. Hydrogen can be blended with natural gas and burned in an internal combustion engine, or it can be used in a fuel cell, a device that chemically converts hydrogen into electricity, but there are two major concerns. One is that even when it is supercooled into liquid form, hydrogen has a relatively low energy density and its onboard tankage would require about 8 times as much space as tanks for ultra-low sulfur diesel and 4 times as much space as tanks for LNG. Fuel cells take up a lot of space too. Second, hydrogen is highly flammable, which can present additional risk. Ammonia is often viewed as a more feasible alternative because it has a considerably higher energy density than hydrogen. Its refrigerated tanks would take up only half the space of cryogenic hydrogen tanks, and because it can be converted back to hydrogen on board a ship, allowing the hydrogen to be used in a fuel cell. Ammonia also can be combusted in an engine, though it's difficult to ignite, doesn't sustain combustion well, and produces both nitrogen oxide, a contributor to smog, and nitrous oxide, a potent GHG. The primary downside is ammonia's toxicity. The chemical requires very careful handling and special tankage and piping to avoid the possibility of any leaks. Methanol produced from biomass, biogas, waste streams, and captured CO2, using renewable energy of course, is yet another option. Among the pros for methanol's use as bunker fuel are that it is a liquid at atmospheric pressure so it can be stored in tanks similar to those used for conventional oil-based fuels, though about twice as much tank space is required due to methanol's lower energy density. The major negatives are that, like green and blue hydrogen and ammonia, very little green or blue methanol is being produced and costs are high. As we'll get to in the next blog in this series, a lot of work is already being done by shipowners, shipbuilders, and others to advance the development of green and blue hydrogen, ammonia, and methanol production and to build and test vessels that would be powered by these alternative fuels. Still to be determined is the speed and degree to which each of the bunker options we discussed today could be adopted. Try Just a Little Bit Harder was written by Jerry Ragavoy and Chip Taylor. The song appears as the first cut on side one of Janis Joplin's debut solo album, I Got Dem Old Cosmic Blues Again Mama. The tune was first recorded by soul artist Lorraine Ellison and appeared on her 1966 album, Stay With Me. Try was released as a single by Joplin, backed with One Good Man in early 1970, but failed to make the Billboard charts. Personnel on the record were Janis Joplin on lead vocals and acoustic guitar, Sam Andrews on electric guitar and backing vocals, Brad Campbell on bass, Richard Kermode and Gabriel McClure on keyboards, Maury Baker and Lonnie Castile on drums, Terry Clements on tenor sax, Snooky Flowers on baritone sax and backing vocals, and Luis Gasca on trumpet. I Got Dem Old Cosmic Blues Again Mama was recorded at Columbia Records Studios in New York City in June 1969. Produced by Gabriel McClure, the album was released in September 1969. It went to number 5 on the Billboard Top 200 Albums chart and has been certified platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America. It was the first album Joplin recorded after leaving her band Big Brother and The Holding Company and would be the only solo LP released during her lifetime. Three singles were released from the LP. Janis Joplin was an American singer and songwriter. Joplin got her first professional big break after appearing with Big Brother and The Holding Company at the Monterey Pop Festival in 1967. She released 4 studio albums, 7 live albums, 14 compilation albums, and 13 singles. She has a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award and is a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Joplin died in October 1970 at the age of 27.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.